welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today it's the return of the classic album Clash. Now, listen, we've done some great ones over the years, Metallica and Ozzy and Van Halen and Stryper and Nirvana. This might be one that you're a little bit less familiar with. I'm talking, of course, about Barron Cross. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this band. They were kind of emerged in about 86 when the Christian metal craze was just getting going, basically in its peak in about 88. And Barron Cross was right there with Stryper as being the biggest Christian metal band in the world. They were also on Enigma Records, fronted by Mike Lee, who had half blonde hair and half black hair. Very much where Stryper was more Van Halen and kind of a little bit poppier, glossier sound. Barron Cross was much more Iron Maiden and Judas Priest influence. They're great playing, a little bit proggy at times. They're actually a great band if you've never heard them. Go check out the Atomic Arena record and the State of Control record, which are the two that we're doing right now today. And even though you might not have heard of this band, it's pretty fun. And I think that Howard Jones from Light the Torch and former Killswitch Engage is here, along with Richard Christie, the drummer and comedian. You know where he's from. And we are the Heavens Metal Christian text group that we got, talking about Atomic Arena and State of Control. It's very, very funny. It's pretty hilarious. The good news is both of these albums were remastered by Rob Colwell of Bombworks Sound, and they've both been released. Newly remastered, limited edition versions of Atomic Arena, State of Control, and actually the live album, Hotter Than Hell, that contains tracks from both of these. They come with new booklets featuring a ton of rare and never before seen photos of the band. And the new Arena and Control booklets also have lyrics included. The packaging is very cool. And you can get the remastered albums and CDs wherever you get music. So here it is, the classic album Clash by one of the best bands you've probably never heard of. 1988, it's Atomic Arena. 1989, State of Control. We're all talking, Howard, Richard, and I, talking about how we discovered Barron Cross, seeing them live, which songs are the favorites from the albums, the album covers, and of course the world famous song by song battle to see which is the best one on either album. We're going to make our vote of which we like best. So here we go. It's the classic album Clash, Barron Cross, Atomic Arena, and State of Control here on Talk is Jericho, starting now.
What'd you say, Richard?
So Comic-Con's going on in New York.
Right.
And I took the train from where I live in Jersey now into Penn Station, and the first thing I saw when I got off the train, it was the greatest thing ever. I saw a guy dressed like Barf from Spaceballs getting arrested. And he had a box of like dog biscuits in his hand, and he had to like set him down for the handcuffs and stuff. Oh, it was so great.
That reminds me, when I was eating at this shitty little breakfast place on Hollywood Boulevard, you know, all the people that are dressed up as like, you know, different characters and stuff, that you take pictures with them, they charge you money. Mm-hmm. I saw Marilyn Monroe and Elvis at a table bitching about how much of an asshole Rambo was. Down at Rambo, the guy won't leave his street corner. He's such a jerk. He won't even leave. But yeah, we're excited to be. It's Howard and Richard and Chris here. It's the Heavens Metal. I don't know what... What's our new one? The new one is the Stryper auction. Richard, what was your dream with the Stryper dream that we had?
Oh my God, yeah. We were talking about, I texted you guys and you thought I was a freak right away. I had this crazy dream about Stryper, and they held an auction at Coney Island and they were auctioning off all this rare stuff. I think I bought Robert Sweet's boots or something. But I was backstage hanging with Stryper, and Jon Bon Jovi was there, and Jon Bon Jovi had bid on and won a Stephen Piercy head fireworks shooter thing, fireworks cannon. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, you've got the Stephen Piercy, it was a fireworks cannon in the shape of Stephen Piercy's head. And then Jon Bon Jovi was like, oh, I kind of feel bad for Stephen Piercy that he has to sell fireworks cannons now. And it was the most odd dream ever.
What in the world?
And it ended in an orgasm. So, no, I'm just kidding. It was not a nocturnal.
You woke
ambition.
Up sticky. Yeah. But that's the funny thing, though, is that we started this kind of text group, just to remind people, a Christian metal text group. And all three of us were Christian metal fans and kind of found each other, have a lot in common, but become like probably my daily routine is talking to you guys, aka texting. at least 5, 6, 7 times. And when we get rolling, it's 30, 40, 50 times.
I text you guys more than my wife.
Yeah, I know.
This is my number one texter.
Yeah, this is literally, how long has this been going on? Three, four years now?
3, 4 years. Probably four years.
You guys are still literally the people I text the most.
Yeah.
I do not understand this. And what's weird is how much I love wrestling. And we never talk about these
things. No, we don't. And Richard loves both, too. And I love the same. All we talk about is ridiculous Christian metal stuff.
Michael Drive. Baron
Michael Drive. That's what we're doing today.
Like,
this is going to be probably the least rated Talk is Jericho ever. But I don't care. It's my show. Yep. And we're going to do a classic album clash. We did a very successful one. It was last year, but aired a few months ago, Striper. It was To Hell with the Devil versus Soldiers. And today it's going to be Baron Cross, Atomic Arena versus State of Control. You might have never heard of these bands. Hopefully you'll listen because you enjoy our witty banter.
And if not, we're going to enjoy it anyway. We'll listen back to it. Three of us will listen and have a great time.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. But we were just saying, like, that was we started the group and we went and saw Striper a few years ago, the three of us.
Absolutely. Yep.
And not to get too personal, but we've had we've talked before on Talk is Jericho as well, but Howard was saying that really helped him get out of his shell that he was in, was absolutely hanging out with the three of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really kind of, there's like a couple people that I can kind of pinpoint that kind of helped me get out of my tailspin and funk. And it's just like Jamie Joss is definitely one of the guys. But this group, you saw it, I was pretty reserved. You know,
I remember the first time we met for the Striper show.
Yeah, it's a... life has changed a lot in a short period of time. But yeah, it was just like, oh my God, I could actually be a human again.
But
wow, this is weird. Okay,
but cool. You know what I love about that? And this is kind of the crux. And if you go back to the mid-80s when Christian metal was, it was huge. It was a huge thing. It was, I'm sure, very successful, profitable. But more importantly for us as kids, it was, you know, the love of God put these bands out. And we always enjoyed the bands, but I enjoyed the message and the fact that, A, we became better friends. We were always friends. We became like really good friends because of the music and the fact that it helped you, for example. That, to me, is what Christian metal was always about, was fellowship and helping people.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing to see even in this day that it really worked.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah. And just in the most simplest way, it just, Striper kind of... Striper and you guys kind of helped pull me out of some of my really, really low times. And
that's an amazing thing to think about.
And in fact, we're still doing this.
Yeah, we got to keep doing it.
Oh, yeah.
As all professionals, where Michael Sweet is sending us his new song, so what do you think of this, guys?
Oh, my God, that freaks me out so much. I get chills. I fanboy out when I get a text from Michael Sweet. I'm like, God, if I was 12 years old and knew that one day I'd get... You know, a text message from Michael Sweet asking what I think of his new, you know, song from his solo album, I would have been like, that's never really going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's a weird text group that Michael's amassed. It's you and me, I think.
Eddie Trunk.
I think Larry the Cable Guy is in there.
Is that who that other member is? I was like, who's that other
member? Couple.
I'll have to check. It's probably like a Nebraska.
This is so random. So random. How did this even happen? And the funniest thing is, got to give a shout out to my friend Jeremy. He's one of my best friends from back in Ohio. I've known him since I was 15 and he was 14. And he's the guy who pretty much turned me on to heavy music, really heavy music. And young Jeremy and Howard right now, kind of freaking out there. We get to talk about Striper, get to meet these guys and everything, get to share a gold album of theirs.
Yeah, right.
This is amazing.
Well, let's go into it. So back, we're talking about the Christian metal time frame. Striper was the first. I think we all talked about discovering them kind of in 1985 or so.
Yep.
Soldiers Under Command was I think, all of our indoctrination. Yep. Maybe it was To Hell, but...
To Hell was mine,
So 85, 86. And that's when Striper got hot, then suddenly there was this huge explosion of Christian metal bands.
Yes, there was.
And... it was weird because they all infiltrated. Like, I remember Baron Cross, their first record was called Rock for the King.
Yes.
And it was on Star Song Records in Canada.
Yep.
And when Striper came out, I was looking for more Christian heavy metal. And Baron Cross is one of the first ones I found after Striper. Now, every Christian metal band kind of sounded like another one,
mm-hmm.
Like a real band. And Barron Cross was like Iron Maiden.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Because Mike Lee, the vocalist, sounded like a dead ringer for Bruce.
Oh, totally. It was uncanny. The first time you heard, like, holy crap, how is he doing this?
And he's not trying. That's just his vocal style.
Yeah.
It's like the cat from White Cross sounded like Stephen Pearson.
Yeah. that was one of the first bands I discovered after Striper.
White Cross.
Shout out to Scott Wenzel.
He always looked confused in his photos. Like deer in a headlight. Like, smile, Scott.
Maybe another guy was pinching his butt or something.
He had a really high voice, too.
He did.
Even when he was talking. I still remember Jeremy and I seeing it. All these bands we got to see.
That's great, because you grew up in Columbus, right?
Yeah.
So that's Cornerstone was the big festival.
Oh, well, Cornerstone was in Illinois, but there was this place called the King's Place where all those bands used to go.
Wow, you've seen every band.
You've seen them all.
You're the master Jedi of seeing these bands.
I know. I've only ever seen Striper, and that's it,
right?
Yeah.
But I was just there watching. But Jeremy and I, we saw them at, I believe it was a water park in Columbus.
Barron Cross?
Yeah.
Barron Cross.
And even saw Shout there, too.
Wow.
But we went up to Scott's like, hey, man, you going to play Shakedown? Sorry, buddy. Oh, thanks, man. We walked away. He's like, wow, he's got a high voice.
I don't think you're so obscure Barron Cross or a White Cross tracks. You know?
I know.
You play Shakedown.
I haven't thought about that in so long.
You play Heaven's Calling tonight, Scott? Sorry, buddy.
White Cross deep cuts.
Exactly. So, but Barron Cross, like I said, was one of the first ones that I remember, and it was Rock for the King. And the funny thing was, if you remember this record, they were all dressed in blue and white.
Didn't they have a sword?
Yes, they were.
A sword.
Yeah, the whole album cover was blue and white.
Because Striper, of course, was yellow and black. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, it had to be intentional. Like now we're even going down to that. Okay, you guys will be blue and white.
Yeah, and they had some pretty sweet garb on, too.
They did.
Oh, no, we need to find that picture, man.
The picture.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in forever.
So this is not one of the albums we're discussing, but this is kind of the early Barron Cross. And they were literally, I think, in their, like, 21 or 22, just kids. But somehow they got a record deal. And when you took the lyric sheet out, there was a message from Pastor Bob Beeman.
Another guy we discuss frequently in our text message group.
Pastor Bob was kind of like the heavy metal reverend. There you go. We're looking at the Rock for the King.
Okay, we're looking at the cover. Just,
all blue and white, and then the singer, the guy in the middle with his arm in the air, you didn't know it was a singer, but he had a hair that was half blonde, half black.
Like old Seth Rollins
like
style.
Like a skunk.
He's like a skunk. And I always thought that the guitar player in the end, Ray Parris, he looks like Poindexter from Revenge of the Nerds. Literally. Timothy Busfield.
That's probably why that picture is very blurry on their album cover, so you don't see how he looks like Poindexter.
I'm not really trying to bring up wrestling or anything, but it just looks like Glacier is fighting himself a whole lot in this.
If you guys want to see this, we'll post it on Instagram, but go to Rock for the King, Barron Cross. So the Pastor Bob had his message, and I remember all my friends in high school just used to mercilessly ball bust me about that. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, they could barely stand Striper with the lyrics. Then I brought Barron Cross around, who had a little bit heavier tone.
Yeah.
But then the message from Pastor Bob, and I remember friends used to draw pictures of Pastor Bob, and I was like, leave Pastor Bob out of this. It's like, who puts a fucking message from their pastor on the record, right?
This is on a national act.
Yes. And they're trying to make it. And so that record came out. But then about a year later, I remember going into the record store. First of all, so that was my first experience with Barron Cross. And once again, talking kind of what you were talking about, Howard, that record came out, the first one, Rock for the King, right when my parents got like separated.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I think of Barron Cross, it was kind of helping me through this really shitty time in my life. That was the first time I saw them, was on that record. When's the first time you saw Barron Cross? I became aware of them.
Atomic Arena at Walmart in Fort Scott, Kansas.
This is your place.
Yeah, it was my place. Luckily, Walmart sold. They wouldn't sell Metallica or AC/DC, but they'd sell Barron Cross. And it was one of those where I was really into Striper, and I was like, oh, let me seek out some other, you know, Christian bands. And Barron Cross, I liked the cover. I didn't know anything about them. Never had heard of them. And I was like, oh, I'll give it a chance.
How did you know it was a Christian metal band?
I think I looked at the song titles.
There might have even been some kind of a sticker, because that was on Enigma mm-hmm. Records, which was the same record label.
Yeah, same one as Guardian.
I would buy anything on Enigma.
Yep.
And
yep,
I remember I had the Enigma catalog that also had some Metal Blade stuff in it back in the day.
And so I would buy anything order that all was that. On the Canadian Metal Blade distributor was called Bonsai. I would buy anything on Bonsai mm-hmm. Records, and I would buy anything on Enigma,
because
it was always usually Christian metal-based.
Yep.
And then there was Poison. They were on Enigma as well.
Oh, yeah. So I would do that, and I would get anything on Enigma and get anything on Frontline.
Right.
Yeah.
Frontline was a huge Christian label, and Star Song was the other one.
Yep, those were the ones.
I think Star Song was actually owned by the Elefante brothers.
Was it?
Dino and John.
It might have been. I don't remember all my history anymore.
Who produced these records?
Yeah, and I think they were ex-Kansas members.
Yep.
From the band Kansas.
Yeah, and that's why the backing vocals always sound amazing.
Great point. So, is that what did you walk in the record store and see this Atomic Arena?
No, actually, it was my friend Andy from Ohio. And
shout out to Andy.
Still friends with Andy and Keith, and of course Jeremy, because he's in on this too. And I know he would love to be in on this podcast.
If he was in New York, we'd have him here, because we don't have a lot of Baron Cross fans available.
Oh, he would have so much material.
Rich Moore is probably the only other guy, and he's just an Atomic Arena guy.
Well, we'll have at least a couple of listeners to this.
Oh yeah,
there'll
be a couple. They will be attached to us, but there will be a couple.
Yeah.
But yeah, Andy, I was at his place. His mom made some Stromboli. We're eating it, and then up in his room, he had the album, so I'm sitting there just...
Atomic Arena?
Rock for the King.
Okay, wow.
So yeah, I was checking it out and listened to a little bit of it, and it was still really early on.
It was very raw, that record.
Yeah, and I was just like, some of it's not bad, but I wasn't paying that much attention to it, but the layout and everything else, it was like they actually spent money on it. And so it was interesting. So I got to hear that, and I think... right after that was when I heard Atomic Arena. There's a place called Heart Song. You could hang out, play pool, video games.
A juvenile hangout center, teenage nightclub.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, except that, there's sodas and crap like that.
Yeah.
And it was safe. So that was where I saw Imaginary Music. Saw the video, because they had videotapes of... If there was a video, I saw it there.
They
See, it makes me want to sing, Striper. Like that first live appearance, that's where I saw it.
Because those videos, they never played on Headbangers Ball videos.
No, they didn't.
Like that.
But the guy who owned, Rich Fout, shout out. So he owned that place, and just, if there was a Christian metal video, that dude had
it.
So yeah, that's where we go on Saturday nights, hang out and watch videos, and then go bowling.
The cool thing back in those days before the internet, and magazines always be a couple of months behind, was when I would go to the record store every weekend, and just, you didn't really know what was out. You would just look for whatever was out.
Yep.
And I liked Baron Cross from Rock for the King, and then I saw Baron Cross Atomic Arena. Now, a couple things. One, like you said, the album cover is really cool. It's kind of like some kind of a weird factory with pipes and stuff.
Yeah.
The colors
painting.
But Atomic Arena, to me, still to this day, is one of the coolest album titles. Mm-hmm. It just evokes imagery in your head.
Yeah.
What is the Atomic Arena?
Oh, to this day, I still have no idea what that means.
It just sounds great.
Yeah.
And it's not mentioned, it's mentioned in Imaginary Music, but there's no
just song. That one little...
That's right, in the Atomic Arena.
Yeah, and that's it.
And so but what I would like is the progression of the band's look. Because the first one, they're just kids. Someone obviously told them, put this blue and white on.
Mm-hmm.
Then Atomic Arena. Now Mike Lee's gone from his little poodle, little grade tan long hair, to he's got long Bruce Dickinson hair.
Yeah.
And he kept the blonde. So now
Crystal
the little...
Crystal Gayle hair.
Yeah. Yeah, Crystal Gayle. Super long, old school Rich Ward hair down to the freaking waist.
Gets stuck in the crack of his ass.
Yes, but he kept it blonde.
Yeah.
One side blonde. So I was like, that's really cool.
Like Mark Ferrari, didn't he?
Just had the little front thing was blonde, but Mike went all
Mike
the way.
Went one whole side.
One whole side. And then Poindexter had longer hair, so he didn't look like Poindexter anymore. And Jim Laverty was the bass player. Let's go through it. It's Mike Lee on vocals, Jim Laverty on bass. You guys remember the guitar player's name?
Was it Ray Paris?
Ray Paris. And who's on drums?
Wow, how do I remember?
Mike Whitaker?
Steve Whitaker.
Steve Whitaker.
Boom.
Steve
Whitaker.
Okay, we got it.
And we're not reading anything, guys. We're just coming
we don't
off the top
have anything
of our heads.
Open
nothing
at the moment.
Open. But to see them have longer hair and be very cool looking, and then the song titles on Atomic Arena, In the Eye of the Fire, Killers of the Unborn, Living Dead.
It was Cultic Regime.
Such cool names.
Great
song titles on that album.
Yeah, and so you were excited about it right from the start. And then
I think it was maybe Cultic Regimes that I saw the song titles. I was like, I got to buy this. What is that?
What is that? What is Killers of the Unborn?
Because that was right in the middle of the Satanic Panic. I was like, what does this mean? You know?
Yeah. And what I like too about that record is it was almost like every song was an after school special.
It absolutely was.
Am I right?
Yep.
Like, teach you a lesson about
teach you a lesson
oh, yeah.
about
and
social
it spelled
issues.
It out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like I had thought about that looking at the lyrics. I'm like, this reminds me of early 80s rap where they told you exactly what was happening.
The message.
Walk no down the street message. And then I have some coffee. You know, just, okay. So that's kind of what it
but
felt
that's
like.
That's what it was. Like Killers of the Unborn was about abortion. In the Eye of the Fire was about suicide. Cultic mm-hmm. Regimes was about cults.
Yeah.
Terrorist Child.
It's like, about a terrorist child.
Yeah, literally.
Like, he watched a documentary and wrote that. There is no way he has any knowledge of a terrorist child. That man watched something on TV and was like, this moves me.
Exactly.
He was watching CNN way before everybody was watching CNN.
But that's a deadlock about drug abuse. Like, every song had some kind of a message. And that was like kind of like Christian metal, especially extreme, because I would say Stryper was more mainstream mm-hmm. and Barrett Cross was more extreme.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in their sound, but they were in your face.
Yeah, they were.
Like, don't do drugs. Don't get an abortion.
Yep.
Don't commit suicide. And Stryper was more about rocking for the rock type stuff.
Yeah, they were a lot more subtle. Yeah.
So they had, Barrett Cross had a little more bite to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was heavier. And Mike Lee's voice sounded dangerous.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed.
Like, he was going to kick your ass if you didn't get off drugs or something.
That's
seriously,
right.
If you don't change things by the end of this album, you are going to hell.
That's right. And he had that real low, like, cocaine. Like, you know what I mean?
It's like, I remember first hearing that song where he says that.
That
like,
was the single, kind of.
Yeah, and I was like, what is he even talking about? Then he says the word cocaine. And that's what he's talking about.
That's all he says.
He says it a lot meaner than Eric Clapton does.
He just belts it. I was like, bang goes your body now. Cocaine!
It's so random.
Just like, in case you're wondering what we're talking about, let me just shove it in your face. We're talking about cocaine! So they had some steam from that. There was a video for Imaginary Music that you would see once in a blue moon.
Yep.
And then going forward to the next record was State of Control.
State of Control.
Cover not as cool. Kind of a more...
I wrote some notes about this cover.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's talk about the covers first.
All right.
The cover of State of Control, like, to me, it looks like a girl who's home from school looking out the window on a snow day, and she's, like, bored to tears.
And it's a little bit of a cloudy window.
Yeah, like a fogged-up window. She's like, oh, I wish I could have just gone to school today. I'm so bored. There's nothing to do here at home.
And, like, I'm like, why does that – what does that have to do with State of Control? Like, what is this?
No clue. I was just like, who is this sad white girl on the cover of this album? I don't understand it, but okay.
And the colors are, like, this white album with some red and blue. Like,
The
heaviness of the Atomic Arena cover is like the yang of that.
Exactly.
It's a very, like we used to say back, it's wimpy.
Yeah.
It's a wimpy cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So automatically, I'm always excited, it's the new Barrett Cross. Once again, didn't know it was coming out. See it.
Same here. I just saw the cassette at Walmart. I was like, whoa, they have a new album out. Awesome.
Right. Yep. Okay. And then you turn it around, and once again, they've got some cool song titles, not quite as in your face, but there's some good ones. Once again, 2,000 Years. Mm-hmm. Stage of Intensity, Bigotry Man. Okay.
Who are you? Bigotry mom. And then, you know, the songs weren't quite as crazy.
No.
But then when you put the record on, it's very heavy.
It is.
Yeah.
It's got some more mainstream type tunes.
It's a little more polished.
I was going to say the production. I like the production on Atomic Arena a little better. It's more bassy, like more full. State of Control, you could tell they were kind of a little more polished and not, they didn't want to scare people away with the heaviness.
Yeah, and I actually remember, and we'll get into this, I actually remember growing up in Winnipeg that they played Crying Over You on the radio a few times. So to hear Barron Cross on Winnipeg Rock Radio, I don't think I ever heard Stryper on Winnipeg Rock Radio.
Wow. Amazing. So
somebody got through the cracks.
Well, there was a video for that song, too.
And that was a big ballad, and it's actually a great song, but I don't think BC had the money behind them to really...
That's right around the same time the Paolas were getting played a lot up in Winnipeg.
You've got the eyes. I'm a stranger. But once again, you look at the back cover. Now Mike Lee's hair is just super long.
Oh, yeah.
Sunglasses, black gloves.
He should have sold some of his hair to do a little payola.
Did you guys watch that video for Crying Over You?
Yeah, I
loved it.
He looks cool.
Yeah. It's a pretty professional video.
Yeah, you could tell. It's they put money into that.
They had some money behind them. Whatever Enigma had, they gave Barron Cross some budget for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They
had left over from Poison, I guess. Even though the first Poison album, the budget was like $20,000+.
But they made probably $27 million
dollars off that.
And Barron Cross wasn't a Poison. They weren't pretty like Poison. Mike Lee was a good looking guy, but they were a Christian metal band. And even on this one, I remember Inner War was about sex. Bigotry Man was about bigotry. Face in the Dark was about, you know, going off to LA. LA is the place of dreams.
I know. I keep saying, like, good thing Brad Pitt didn't listen to that song because it would have convinced him to stay in Springfield, Missouri. Because they're telling you about the
Mike's
dangers of
not
going
to go.
Don't go to LA. Don't try to be a star.
That's right.
How dare you?
Out of Time was about the rapture.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
they had great intro too.
Great intro. We'll get into all that. So they're both great records, and we're going to do a classic album clash. If you guys haven't heard these records, and you're looking for some great, not just Christian rock and roll, but great '80s music that you might not have heard, great '80s heavy metal. It's very Iron Maiden based, very heavy, but they have a style to them. The Ray Paris, great guitar tone.
Yeah.
Interesting drumming.
Yeah.
I always thought it was very cool. And the bass playing is insane.
Yeah.
That guy's a great bass player.
That's what, on Atomic Arena, you can really hear the bass. That
intro.
Great. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he does a sick bass intro.
So we'll go into, once again, we're saying this all off the tops of our heads.
I have a few notes.
Notes, but literally what we've just said, we're just rattling off the top of our heads.
And I remember Atomic Arena, I don't have an exact date because it didn't say it in when I looked it up, but it was February of 88. Yeah. I remember it was in the winter time. Anytime a record came out in Winnipeg in the winter, and you'd be like, holy shit, this is like minus
50. You can bear down and listen
to
it in your bedroom.
So Atomic Arena came out, and then A State of Control was, I believe, in about May of 89. So it was more of a springtime record, summertime record. We've talked about the covers. We've talked about the band, the way they look. Let's go into the track by track. The first, the kickoff song on Atomic Arena is Imaginary Music. And the kickoff song, The State of Control, is the title track, State of Control, which is about a parent with alcoholism. The drinking damage a parent provokes can ruin a child's tomorrow. Now, we got to get into some of Mike Lee's ridiculous lyrics, too.
Oh, my God, we have to.
He's a guy that rhymed, God came and died for you. But you just want your pleasure on the first record. You can't rhyme you and pleasure.
Pleasure.
It doesn't work.
Pleasure.
No. Pleasure.
But he would pull it off.
If you're French, I guess he can.
So let's go through the two tracks,
well,
Richard.
One of the notes I wrote about State of Control is one of my favorite lines of lyrics. It goes, "It's like I said, being drunk is dead." And, you know, I love beer, so I'm going to have to go with Imaginary Music because any anti-beer song, I don't think I can jive with it.
Hey, it's like I said, when did you say this, Mike?
Yeah, I didn't hear him say that.
It's like I said, being drunk is dead. Like, over the top. Like, the last record, it was cocaine. Now it's okay, we've been through that. Let's hit on the people one of a couple cocktails after school. And I had no idea that because here's another thing that I hated about the record, and then we'll get over to you, Howard.
Sure.
Back in those days, you'd open a record, and there'd be like Atomic Green had a great lyric sheet, pictures of the band, credits. I was a mark for all that stuff. State of Control, typical, just a plastic sheath for the record. No lyrics, no pictures, no nothing.
Crazy.
I hated that. So I didn't even know what this freaking song was about until 15 years later when I bought it on CD.
Yep.
How are we? Oh, sorry. One more thing, too. Oh, imaginary music, like what? I don't even know what those lyrics are about, but it's kind of, to me, it sounds like he's ragging on a musician that's more successful than him.
Kind of. He's talking about being super famous.
You got 15 million fans. They know your name. More money than you can ever spend. How dare you?
Yeah, and it's imaginary music. Like, why?
Yeah.
15 million fans know your name, and that's why they came.
Would Baron Cross be mad if they had that many fans?
Yeah, or was that directed towards Iron Maiden?
Yeah.
It was like, maybe, Jesus, yeah. Easy, Bruce Jesuson.
Maybe he did that because Bruce did Tattooed Millionaire ragging on, you know.
I feel that Mike was left out of the Maiden concert and have a ticket, and when the door closed and they left him out, he wrote that lyric while he was listening to the gig through the wall. Yeah, imaginary music, it's power. Don't abuse it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the lesson for that album, is don't get too high on your own horse if you're a rock star. Howard?
And that's, of course, what it got from it. And I remember that was where I first really started paying attention to Baron Cross. Mm. Like I said, I heard Rock for the King with when my friend had the album and with the nice layout and all that stuff. But that was the first song. And that's the song that I got to see that video every week at Heart Song.
That's great.
Yeah, so that was my introduction and love it. That song's permanently stuck.
And I didn't even see the video for a while, but I remember just putting the record on and you put the lead on the record. It's heavy. It's like, this is cool.
Yeah, because State of Control, it's not as really powerful.
It's not a good, I would say it's not even, I mean, it's a good song because we've heard it so much.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I heard it, I thought it's a little bit stock.
I was just like, what?
Yeah, totally.
It's like, the chorus was great, but it was just, okay, it was a song.
Yeah.
It kick off the new record. That's what I remember thinking, like, uh-oh. Is it going to be one of these things like every other band that I love, Lizzie Borden, Loudness, Raven, that was super heavy and then got super lame, Saxon, where you'd be like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, you blew it.
Luckily, though,
they pull it back.
Yeah, they did.
The next song. Yeah, exactly.
So, so I think it's all three of us, because the consensus is imaginary music.
Yeah.
Another thing I like about Baron Cross, too, is they're like a Queen type of a songwriting situation where everybody in the band wrote songs.
Yes. Yeah.
Steve Whitaker got his one song per record. And
which I can't wait to talk about.
Both of them. Yeah.
My favorite Baron Cross song ever.
Wow, okay. So then the next song for Atomic is Killers of the Unborn versus Out of Time. Killers of the Unborn about abortion.
Yes.
What's the line? I'm now in pieces in a garbage bag.
It's a pretty brutal and depressing
think about that.
Lyric.
It's a very brutal lyric.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that's another reason why, like I said, they're in your face. They didn't care about being politically correct back in that time frame, which no one really did. But Baron, like, lair down, commence to drill, a primo murder, the legal kill. I'm a child about to die. My mother does not hear my cry. So he's singing from the point of a fetus.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Injection starts to work its way. I don't feel love. I just feel pain. I'm getting weaker. My poison blood. Death surrounds me like a flood.
Did he have to research abortion to know that there's a drill involved?
Who's drilling?
He's literally describing like a DNC. What is this?
He's describing like a back alley abortion.
Yeah,
who's using a drill?
A drill, yeah.
Like, that's not how abortions work. Yeah. You know, I know that. And then the operation is over. I'm now in pieces in a garbage bag. Guilt will now take over because where's the relief you thought you had? So now... I love this too. The shame and scars she bears, scar of guilt going to wear, but he can forgive her if she gives her life to the Savior. Wow, that's heavy. You know, no, they're going to kill me. I don't want to die. Just leave me be. Like, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Even to this day, I have a hard time hearing those lyrics.
Like, we can listen to ripping entrails from a virgin's cunt.
Oh, yeah, because that's so outrageous.
This is really hits you where you live.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Learn a lesson, corpse grinder.
George the Thumb. I call him the Thumb. I told you that. He's got a face and he's got a neck and that's about it.
Oh, I love George.
Greatest guy. But so, that song is so lyrically heavy.
Yeah.
And then it goes up against Out of Time, which is about the rapture.
Yep.
Thousands, perhaps millions of people just disappeared.
That riff.
Great riff.
Whew.
And the thing is about that. Now, what was the movies that were
It was
out?
Like an early 70s movie.
Early 70s.
That they got that intro from. Christian horror movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me guess.
I'm pretty sure I have because there was this place called the Christian Free Drive-In in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was basically a just outdoor movie theater. And they would show old Christian movies about Judgment Day and the rapture. And so I'd just be sitting there eating popcorn to watching these really bad movies. And so, yeah,
did anybody make out at those movies in the car?
Oh, yeah, you see that. And plus, like, if I went there, I'd go there and work. I'd, like, clean up and, throw away trash and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'd get to get in for free and get free popcorn. So that's what I do. And so, yeah, I saw all that stuff as a kid.
Here's the intro, if we can hear it. And this, like you said, there's, like, Christian horror movies.
Yeah.
That were super little.
Coming in from all over the globe, confirming it as true. To say that the world is in a state of shock this morning would be to understate the situation. The event seems to have taken place at the same time all over the
same
world.
Same time?
About 25 minutes ago.
Suddenly, in without warning, morning,
literally thousands, perhaps millions of people just disappeared.
That's when you know that this album is going to be heavy.
They're back with that riff.
Yeah,
yep. Just that riff alone.
Oh, gives me chills.
That intro, and I didn't know at the time. I thought it was kind of like a Prisoner or a Number of the Beast where they had it recorded, but they took that from the movie.
I had no idea until actually a few years ago.
Really?
You guys told me that.
Right.
I've seen so many of those movies. It really was a thing back in the late 60s and 70s. So many,
and they
movies
made like
about
one after another after another.
One after
they
another.
They were doing it long before Kirk Cameron was.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But doing those Left Behind movies. The precursor, yeah.
It was. It was like the original Left Behind. And the Left Behind movies budget, I think, were even worse than the original '70s budget. Because I remember I went to. There was always Christian bookstores where you could buy Christian rock and roll, mm-hmm. Frontline Records, Star Song Records.
Yep.
And they had the videos. I remember looking at the video and thinking, should I rent this? I look at the back and it was like, the world is dead, and it'd be like some guy with some really shitty fake looking blood. Like standing with handcuffs on, like screaming. It just looks cheap and it looks shitty. I'm like, I can't do this.
Yep.
I don't want to do it.
They were bad.
They were bad.
But
Out of Time, great riff. That's Mike singing very angrily.
Yeah.
And there's a breakdown. He's coming back. It's a matter of fact, but you don't know when he's coming.
With some cool, like, reverb drums going on.
He's coming again, like, super high. Like I said, when Bruce Dickinson left Iron Maiden, it should have been Michael Kiske from Helloween, or if you wanted to go American, it should have been Mike Lee.
That's a great point. That.
Like his voice was Bruce.
I wonder if he thought about like calling them or auditioning.
He's
them,
so
or...
nuts. He was Michael Drive at that point. We'll get into that later. But this to me is a tough choice. Killers of the Unborn versus Out of Time. Mm. What do you go with, Howard?
I got to go with Out of Time.
Wow.
That riff is undeniable. It's like the sample into the riff. Can't beat it.
Yeah.
Yep.
When we were talking, we still have to do this. We're talking about doing Reason for the Season for Christmas.
Yeah.
And we were saying we could back it up with a B-side of Out of Time. And we actually called Michael Sweet to see if he would play a solo on it. And he said he would have Michael Stryper playing a solo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, are we ever going to finish this thing?
We'll do it. Are we ever going to start? The drums are done.
I'm kind of thinking that we may have to play with the song a little bit. And kind of make it our own, though. It's like we've kind of got like a straight recording of it. I'm like, what if we play with it? We just got to mess with it.
Yeah, we just got to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
We the three of us can handle it and figure it out.
Absolutely.
So you're going with Out of Time.
Got to go with Out of Time.
Richard?
I have to go with my favorite Barron Cross song. And actually probably one of my top 20 favorite songs of all time, Out of Time.
Wow.
I freaking love that song. You know how like it rarely happens, but when you're listening to an album for the first time and you hear a song and you love it the first
instantly.
Time you hear,
yep.
Instantly you get chills.
Yeah.
That's what I got when I heard that chorus. I was like, Oh my God. I probably even cried. I was like, this is the greatest. Like holding on. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like the first time I heard Calling on You by Striper, but. Like,
yep.
Yeah. First time I heard that, I was like,
same vibe.
Right away. Yeah. There's very few songs. You hear them the very first time and freak out. And that was out of time for me. Like, the riff, but mostly the chorus. That is just like one of the catchiest, coolest choruses ever.
Great point. I mean, like you said, Howard, the backing vocals of the Kansas Elefante brothers. Yeah. But it's just, we're laughing about Mike Lee's lyrics, but these lyrics are great. Don't wait. Like a thief in the night.
Yeah.
You better turn on your light. He might come back tonight. Yeah. And if you're a Christian, like that's what you're told. He'd come back at any point in time. So get your shit together, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Because there's going to be no warning.
And if you listen on headphones, the intro is in the right side, in your right ear, and the riff comes into your left ear.
It just assaults you.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a great riff. It's funny because I love Killers of the Unborn. That's another riff that just comes out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because State of Control, the song was so... once again, it's a great song, but it's very mid-tempo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in your face. And then this just attacks you because you're thinking this is going to be their wimpy album. And then that came out. You're like, oh, my gosh.
And Steve Whittaker wrote this song with one of the Elefante brothers, Out of Time.
Really?
Look at you.
This is Steve's song on the album.
Song, yeah.
It's like you said, he had one every album.
Yeah, drummer.
There you go.
And I actually did look at I didn't look at who wrote all the songs, but occasionally when you look at songs, you start telling... You're able to know who's writing what.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It doesn't take long.
Yeah, and he, like I said, I'm a big Killers of the Unborn fan, but oof, geez, man, I guess I'll go with Out of Time.
Yeah.
I mean, we got to make it a full sweep here. Just because of, like I said, the placement of the song in kind of turning my attitude around about the album.
Yeah.
And now I can, like I said, I can listen to State of Control and it's a good tune, but that one just made me think, like, oh my God.
That is honestly the best description of it. The first song, it's like, okay, it's a good song, but this is what this album is.
They should have started with Out of Time.
Yeah, like it would have been a good intro.
Yeah.
Some kind of weird sirens and stuff, and then going into that voice, kind of a War Pigs type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting there telling them about their work and art and everything, but you should have called the album Out of Time, and it should have been the first song.
Well, there's a lot of other, like 2000 Years would have been a great album title. Stage of Intensity would have been a great album title. But at this point in time, when obviously someone is throwing money at them to get them on the radio in small town Canada, they were probably told, this is what we're going to call it.
Yeah.
This is the order. You never know about what was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because State of Control is a song that like a non-metal fan would hear and say, oh, that's a cool song.
Yeah, that's a good way to start it
drive them away.
And your album cover is going to look like a weird hotel painting.
All right, and then we go to, and once again, it's funny because we're talking about how heavy Out of Time is to set the tone for the record. The next one is like this beautiful ballad, Crying Over You, which was very standard for the time.
Yep.
Versus In the Eye of the Fire, which, oh my God. Sorry, guys, there's nothing even close here, but In the Eye of the Fire was about suicide. And it was written by Jim Laverty, the bass player. And you could tell because the whole song is like a bass solo.
Oh my God. It's amazing.
It starts with a bass intro, which as a bass player at 17 when this came out, I was like, oh my God, he's two-handed tapping. And then the middle part is just this crazy breakdown of like guitar, bass, drum. It's almost like a Dream Theater part or something like that.
Yeah,
it's cool.
So good and so heavy. And once again, like, you are the beauty in life. Don't die. Like, beware the lie. It's happy to die. No.
I actually wrote those down. I don't want to give the dude that much grief, but come on, bro. I wrote that one down. It was that funky.
Michael Drive, if you're listening, sorry.
Wait out your strife, but don't take your life. In the eye of the fire.
In the eye.
Of the fire. Yeah, I love that. Wait out your life. Wait out your strife, but don't take your life. Like I said, Crying Over You, it was cool to hear it on the radio. But In the Eye of the Fire, I mean, dude, you can't beat that for me. That's one of my favorite BC songs, so I'm going with that one.
I love In the Eye of the Fire because it kind of sounds like Transylvania by Iron Maiden.
Oh, good call.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know if they meant to do that or...
Well, I never made that connection.
Yeah, but... There you go.
Anytime you're in a bass solo in heavy metal. So go ahead.
But I'd have to go against the grain and pick Crying Over You.
Wow.
I love that song. It's got a great chorus. In the Eye of the Fire is awesome, but to me, it kind of always sounded a little bit too much
too
like
Maiden.
Iron Maiden.
Too
Maiden.
That's a real Maiden song.
Yeah, yeah. So I would prefer to just listen to Maiden. Luckily, my parents weren't one of the parents that would only let me listen to Barron Cross and not Iron Maiden. I had the choice to listen to both. But Crying Over You, I love that. It's okay. just a cool ballad.
In a different world, could have and should have been a big hit because it was perfect for the radio.
Absolutely.
It was perfect what was going on at the time. Should they have led that off as their first single? No.
No.
But once again, I'm sure that wasn't their choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Howard?
Yeah, I could go back and forth with this all day with these two songs. Gonna go with Crying Over You.
Wow.
Gonna do it. I mean, the bass makes that. And, you know, I didn't make the even though they do sound like Iron Man, I didn't make the connection with that song. But for me, it's just that was one of the better that was one of the better power ballads for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just I just enjoyed it. So
all right. Well, that's Crying Over You gets the Duke on that one. And then we go to two songs that are very similar to me. They're kind of similar riff songs, Terrorist Child versus A Face in the Dark, which is a very stock title, but a great song.
Yeah, and the chorus is awesome.
Really great song.
And fast, too, which I love.
And once again, after Crying Over You, it comes out of the gate. We're like, oh, this is another like kind of old-school-sounding Barron Cross tune.
Yeah.
The Terrorist Child, the terrorists versus the dreamers in Hollywood that go and die because fame is fleeting. What do you think, Richard?
I think I have to go, even though they're discouraging people to go to L.A. and live their dreams, I think I have to pick A Face in the Dark.
Yes.
You know, like I said, the lyrics are pretty funny. They're about, you know, don't go out to L.A. or something bad's going to be happen to you. You won't be a movie star, so stay put in Kansas where you are. So, and Terrorist Child is great. It's a heavy song, but to me, it always said it's another one. It sounded like 2 minutes to midnight.
You are making the connections.
Yeah, and you know, sorry, Barron Cross, but I was such a Maiden fan at the time. I was like, oh, this kind of, you know, I'll listen to 2 minutes to midnight, 2 minutes to midnight instead. So I got to pick A Face in the Dark. I love it. It's fast. It's heavy. And I promise you, I won't just pick every song from State of Control.
I like there's it though, some... because I thought this was going to be more of an Atomic Arena, monopoly, but this is why I love doing these shows because you think about it. I love Terrorist Child never really connected with me. I thought it was a little bit stock. I hated that drum beat that we've talked about, the Neon Cross, where they just go.
I forgot about the Neon Cross conversation. That drum beat.
And this had that.
Maybe they could only afford, like Neon Cross could only afford to record one drum track. And then they had to use it for
just
every song.
It out, yeah. Yeah.
There are 14 people who know who we're talking about.
They'll look it up.
And 12 of them are listening right now. But the Terrorist Child kind of had that beat. But I think the lyrics for A Face in the Dark, you know, we're laughing about don't go to L.A., but it's some good stuff. Like, L.A. is the place of dreams, or so it seems. Is there a place you're running to? Don't like it where you are. Life is oh so hard. You feel like running somewhere new. As a teenager, that's your life. Like,
yeah.
You just want to get away from your parents or the shit that's going on.
It's like a Fallen Angel by Poison.
It is.
I was just about to say that.
Good
vibe.
Yep.
I'm envisioning, too, the Welcome to the Jungle video where Axl comes off the bus. But I always love this one. This is the pre-chorus. The things that wait for you isn't what you want. Who you think you'll be is not who you'll become. That's good. That's good. That's good lyrics. Once again, the price of fame. So definitely for me, Face in the Dark. It's one of my favorite songs on this record. And definitely better for me than Terrorist Child. Howard?
Yeah, that chorus for Face in the Dark, I just love it. But yeah,
great harmony in it too,
and powerful. Da, da, da. His vocals are powerful.
Yeah,
it's amazing. But Terrorist Child, if you only knew, you were taken and brainwashed only to kill. Okay, so your target audience is terrorist children? Are you? What was your plan, man? Sorry, gotta go with a face in the dark. It was just I'm sitting here reading this like who's listening to this and thinking, well, I'm gonna go ahead and put the bomb down. Like, I don't get it. It didn't make sense to me. So yeah, the music was kind of cool. There were some cool parts to it, but
yeah,
face in the dark.
Then it's Close to the Edge versus Stage of Intensity. For me, Close to the Edge is another one. I think it's a cool song. It's got a good kind of ending part to it. But to me, Stage of Intensity might be my favorite Barron Cross song.
Oh, wow.
It's so weird. It's almost right? It's almost a prog rock song.
It is. It's everything.
It's strange.
It's everywhere. I mean, I'm sorry. I had to interrupt there. Just because I'm laughing. Because that song, because I had no idea where it was going.
Where it was going.
First heard.
That's
and,
right.
And then you hear the acoustic, and then all of a sudden, you're basically into a thrash beat.
Is it an old school thrash beat?
It's,
is it another ballad? And then it just goes, and then it builds Take It Home with a Take It Home. Yeah. So, and then it goes to another acoustic part, and then out of nowhere, it just goes, and the lyrics are about being on a stage, and we want to play for you. And it was just this, like, you mentioned the Iron Maiden connection. Another thing I liked about Barron Cross is they had longer proggy songs.
I was going to say, this song like is Maiden. Like 7 minutes long.
Yeah, they always threw out a longer one.
Yeah, and it had tempo changes, and it had different parts, which as a Metallica Maiden fan in 1988, 89, I loved it.
Yeah.
And I remember just like, once again, whatever trials and tribulations I had with State of Control, the song, and then Crying Over You when you first hear it, like, oh my gosh. This one was like, between Out of Time and this, I've got my money's worth already, and I still have a whole second side to listen to. Mike's vocals are great. The acoustic guitar, which he played on an acoustic V guitar, which I've never seen.
Does he still use it?
He still does on that Swedish thing, Elements of Rock, that we watched in 2012. He plays it, but it's such a great, weird, awesome tune for what I was into at the time. To this day, and it's got a great scream at the end. Whenever I'm warming up, if I'm feeling good, I'll hit that scream where it goes, all right, it's super high. And if I can nail that, I know I'm going to have a good night on stage. So
that's awesome.
Thumbs up to State of Control. I can't even really even say anything about Close to the Edge because I just listened to it again last night. It doesn't stand out to me. Great, fine, but Stage of Intensity is the one for me. Yep. How about you, Richard?
I agree. I got to go with Stage of Intensity. Yeah, Close to the Edge is kind of like the song State of Control. It's kind of
stock,
just
right?
Stock. Yeah. You know,
imagine if they would open the album with that. Though,
yeah.
Right?
Oh. Yeah. But I love the lyrics on Stage of Intensity. Cheer till the end of the year. It's like, do they expect people to stop cheering on January 1st?
I think we've got
to
make that a thing.
Yeah.
Just on
cheer
stage
till
now,
the end of the year.
On the stage now,
horse?
Chris, we got to tell people cheer till the end of the year.
Yeah. Wouldn't you go hoarse about November, though? Like,
this is our last song, and you are not done yet.
We've gone through this before on the group chat where we've gone through the funny Mike Lee lyrics. But like you said, we're going to cheer till the end of the year. But I just, the surge of power in my blood, a flash of lightning's coming down, escaping to the hungry crowd where they receive it screaming loud. Like, it's just like, okay, what rhymes with crowd? Loud.
And you know they wrote this for the live show.
Yes, for the live show.
I think his name was Mike Lee Soros. He just immediately went for whatever word was close enough.
There's a chemistry in here intense enough to make them cheer. Till the end of
the year.
Year.
So, yeah, I'm going with Stage of Intensity.
Oh, yeah, great tune. How about you, Howard?
Gotta go Stage of Intensity. I mean, Close to the Edge. I mean, that was a catchy little Close to the Edge. Yeah, it's real catchy, but for the most part, it did kind of feel like it was a filler.
Yeah, it was.
It felt like a filler, but Stage of Intensity, that's why I cackled like a witch. It's just like, that's how I've always described that song. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Because it does everything.
Yeah.
And it's so long. But yeah, that's the one where we'd be in the car, me and Jeremy, that song starts, we're headbanging.
It's almost like if someone said, what is Barron Cross? I might put that song on. Here's what they are.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's acoustic, it's heavy, it's weird, it's fast.
It's a mix of everything.
There's a great breakdown in the middle. Here's a great line. It's a responsibility of a musician. The man that plays the instrument can be a tool, and so he is responsible for what he tells you.
Imagine does he mean Tool, though, as like a nerd or a dork?
Now it's time for you to respond by getting very loud, captured by the mood of the song that we will play for you now. You act as the jury in the court of rock and roll. All will rise. Push into the fast lane. Floor it to the metal. Now scream to the sky.
It's like, I need to write what things are exactly.
Now it is time for you to respond by getting very loud. Like, who writes that as a lyric? That's terrible.
And you sang it with power. With passion, and emphasis. Yeah. You put your all into that.
And if you don't respond, you're going to have to go put your nose in the corner.
Oh, my God.
Because you're going to be in trouble by Mike Lee.
Until the end of the year. And then we go to Deadlock.
The song's about singing a song. Come on, Mike.
Deadlock versus Hard Lies. Deadlock is the one that we were talking about earlier that just shouts out in the middle of it, cocaine! There was a music show, a radio show in Winnipeg. I think it was syndicated. The host was David Hyde. It was called Spin 180. And they would play the best new Christian music, and Deadlock was on it. That might be the first time I heard something from Tom Macarena, and I was like, this is a really cool song. Smoke and fire on your lips again. The pipe's never cold anymore. Now someone's just, what do you smoke out of a pipe? Crack? I don't know. Like, now he's...
This was a little, maybe yeah, even before the crack.
This was real
days.
Early in the, yeah. This was like maybe right after like New Jack City.
So, right?
Yeah, and that was like
early
80.
This is early 88.
Maybe
now.
He's talking to like grandpas that smoke a tobacco pipe. I don't know.
Pipes. So now, and this is once again, this is Mike kind of the narrator in a Shakespearean play, The Dukes and Machina, who comes down and now tells you, okay, we were talking about abortion, pieces in a garbage bag. Wait out your strife. Don't take your life. There's terrorist children. Now you're gonna. Then we're talking about people smoking crack cocaine out of a pipe, and you're gonna die again. Yeah. great riff. It goes up against Hard Lies, which might be my least favorite Barron Cross song. It's super poppy. It's almost like holding on to Hell with the Devil,
just which I love.
I know you love it, and we love it too. But it's a very I don't know if they were trying to write a radio song or a poppy song.
Well, to me, it always sounded like an ad for batteries or a truck ad or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Like a jingle.
Yeah, like a jingle.
Yeah, to me, that song sounded like it could have been on a Holy Soldier album.
Wow, yeah. Good point. Very harmony, poppy, yep. Melodic, and not, you know, they had that side of them, but they'd never gone that far to the pop side before. So for me, it's going to be Deadlock, which is, I think, is still a great tune, and it's a great introduction to the album.
And I seem to recall Jeremy liking that song a lot. I could be wrong, but yeah, you liked that one. And so I heard that one a lot.
Deadlock?
But yeah. So in comparison, I'm going ahead and throw mine in. Deadlock.
I'm going Deadlock as well.
Hot steel, the pipe's never cold anymore. The more you feel, the more you can't let go. Bang goes your body now. Cocaine! Harmless though it seems, it starts just like a dream, but it ends. Ends!
Yeah, see, that was in case you thought he was smoking tobacco.
Yeah.
He wants you to know.
He spelled it out.
Cocaine!
Yeah. Halfway through, he told me what he was talking about.
Like his lyric later on, now I will divulge his name. Now I will divulge what I'm talking about.
Cocaine!
Oh, my gosh.
Divulge.
Song number six, also lesson number six.
That's right. That's
absolutely.
Right. Now, Spin 180, once again, about a year and a half later, the new Barron Cross. And I would have to get up in the morning. I think it was on at 9 a.m. on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I would have to get up and press record on my little ghetto blaster thing. And you're drinking at this point in time. You're 19, 18. The Sundays when I slept in, I was so mad that I missed Spin 180. Like, it was my day. Like, I got to hear what's going on. Wow. The first song from the new Barron Cross that they played. We're not there yet. We'll put that story later. The next song is Inner War versus Cultic Regimes. Cultic Regimes starts with a very wacky laugh.
Oh, that laugh used to scare the hell out of me. Well, not because it's scary sounding, but I just wasn't prepared for it.
Oh, it came out of nowhere.
It comes out of nowhere. And you think, like, I would hear it and think, oh, you know, my mom's laughing in the next room or something. It's just a weird laugh out of nowhere.
Wait, does your mom sound like that?
No, but, oh, yeah, let's listen to it. It's like, who? I want, if I could ever talk to Mike Lee, like, who did that laugh and why? Like, and what does it have to do with cultic regime?
We need some kind of a catchy intro for this. Mike, you do your Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, was Mel Blanc in the studio next to them or something?
Hey, Mel, this is Baron Cross, upcoming Christian metal band.
Let's do it.
Oh, my God. My cheeks hurt.
Yeah, cultic regime is an interesting song because, once again, after that laugh, there's a little bit of kind of a chorded intro, and then it gets super thrashy fast. It jumps right into it. There's a crazy bass breakdown on it. It's a really cool song. But Inner War is a very heavy riff, talking about the battle of the flesh, shall we say.
And even has some almost like death metal style vocals in the middle. In Inner War, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, in the middle of the breakdown.
Yeah.
Great harmony on the chorus. Mm-hmm. I'm going to scream. I'm going to shout. I got to tell you this one part here from Cultic Regimes, though, which is...
I know what you're going to say.
Listen to me. The Bible, it says, one God's the maker of all. If you don't believe that Jesus is God, then my God made yours. That's all. It's almost like... Pfft. Brainwash the goose, brainwash the gander.
That's the best.
Brainwash what moves and gives. If I could brainwash the cult of the truth, millions of lives would live. Brainwash.
There's no way the three of us did not specifically hone in on those lyrics.
Exactly. Oh my God.
All of us were that's unreal.
For me, I grew up on a farm, and you can't get a goose to do anything, let alone sit still so that you can brainwash it. So I was, when I heard that, like growing up in Kansas, I'm like, well, how do you brainwash a goose?
And never mind that, the gander's even worse.
And what is a gander? I guess I'd have to Google that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, dude. I mean, this is a good one. I don't know. What do you think? Which way are you going to go?
Yeah, it's a tough decision, but just for, I got to go with, I'll go with Cultic Regimes.
Yeah, gander's a male goose, by the way.
Oh, it is. I should have known that. I grew up on a farm. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Your mom and dad are not going to be happy.
I know.
It's just the fact that he used that phrase. He somehow tied that into a hard rock / metal.
Yeah,
punk.
And well, he made sure to include the male and the female geese. You know, you don't just brainwash the goose. You brainwash the male version of the goose, too.
Got them both.
Like I said, Cultic Regimes is a cool song, but Inner War just really hit me, especially as a Christian. And obviously when you're a teenager, because this came out, I was still a teenager, and you know, you're trying not to have sex because God doesn't want you to, and you're just like, oh, it's fucking hard. But I remember this one, the line towards the end, I'm on my knees asking right from wrong. I look to the God who makes me strong. I don't live in fear of what I do. And this is my favorite part. I got a spirit of fire that knows the rules, and he sings it like he just spits it out. That knows the rules. And I'm just like, all right. Like, he had that power. He was almost like a Hetfield type. He could scream like Bruce, but his lower end ballsy vocal was just as good in a lot of ways. The grit to it. Yeah. That's why I think he's very underrated as a heavy metal singer. And even to me as a singer, he's one of my favorites, but I would never say that.
Yeah, it's not something that you're gonna, it's not like the first guy you're gonna think
of. Pop in your head.
But if you start thinking back, like, wow, this guy had some influence.
And he's never had a bad performance, even when he did the Bare Bones album, which I'm not sure if you guys heard, and we listened to the Drive stuff.
Uh-huh.
The songs might not be our cup of tea,
no,
but his vocal is always immaculate.
Yeah, he still sounds great.
Yes, and anytime you see him live, any clips that they have, that Elements of Rock from 2012, hasn't lost a step.
No.
He still looks great, too. Like, he's just a really... Had he gone into more mainstream rock and roll, or had Baron Cross struck it big, he'd be a rock star.
Yeah.
Legit. He's got everything.
It definitely looks like he's kind of carving a little path there, doing his thing. But he could have went any number of ways with that voice.
Yeah, exactly. But I'll go with Inner War for this one. How about you, Richard?
I am definitely going Cultic Regimes. That is my second favorite song on Atomic Arena.
All right.
And, you know, being a drummer, that's a fast, really fast. It's almost like a Sick of It All Agnostic Front beat.
Yep.
You know, like a hardcore, 80s hardcore beat.
And once again, it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the record is not like this.
Yeah, totally.
Like,
Yeah, it's like it's like an old punk hardcore song.
And that scream too.
Yeah, the scream, and then the riff, because it's just open chords, and then it just goes. Right hand is working. Rick Parris is a good guitar player too.
Oh, his solos, everything's great.
Great tone, great riffs. So that's the thing about Baron Cross. Like I said, you could never pin them down for musical style.
Yeah. But like I'm a drummer, and I was, you know, like 14 years old at the time. So I used to practice to that song all the time. Awesome. So that's one of the songs I credit with teaching me to play fast. Fast as a Shark. Iron Maiden by Iron Maiden, you know, those are the songs that helped me learn how to play like that.
Can't say I was honing my craft with those lyrics, but but still, Culture Regimes, you got me.
And once again,
just
for people that just know Richard from Howard Stern, very accomplished, amazing drummer.
Oh,
so
thank you.
You got the chops. So the fact you learned from Steve Whitaker.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
That's another thing. Like, I have a lot of, not influence, but I've got a pretty big net for my, not fame because I sound like a dick, but the notoriety that I have, especially standing up for Christian bands. Mm-hmm. And I've met almost all of them, but I've never been able to track down anybody from Bloodgood. And I've been trying. I've been reaching. I DM Michael Bloodgood all the time on Instagram. Nothing. And Baron Cross, no idea who, where they are. I would love to just reach out and say, you guys rock.
Yeah, you know, and same here.
And, you know, just thank you. Yeah, I can't find them anywhere.
I wish they'd do a reunion tour. They're one of the few bands that well, as far as I know, I think they've done some things in Chicago or something, but
they did an album in 94, and then they did that thing in Sweden. But, you know, I mean, if they did a reunion tour, the three of us would be there.
Absolutely.
They would probably draw fairly well. It's funny because Rich Ward, one of his great stories is he turned down a chance. I'm going to say it's Metallica. It's not, but it's something like that. He did not go to Metallica because he went and saw Baron Cross, who had the misfortune of coming to town the same night as Metallica did, or Guns N' Roses or somebody. But he chose to go see Baron Cross and got a chance to meet Mike Lee. So
that's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. So as we move to the next one, it's so when I was talking about Spin 180, the first song I heard from the new Baron Cross was Love at Full Volume. It's a short song, only 2.5 minutes, but it's super heavy. It's a love song, but a very cool one.
Yep.
She was strange, and so I loved her. Mm-hmm. Red hair, a blaze of fire. Boy, she
melted all my wires.
She is mine. And once again, we're not reading anything here.
I believe I texted that last night or this morning.
You did. And that goes. That's from State of Control, and that goes up against Heaven or Nothing, which is a very cool kind of ballad. It's a power ballad. It's a good vocal, it's a good riff, it's great, but to me, Love at Full Volume, one of my favorite Baron Cross songs, like great solo and great drumming, so I'll go with Love at Full Volume. What do you think, Richard?
I have to go with Heaven or Nothing. That's actually my favorite song on Atomic Arena.
Really?
I love that song. It's one of my all-time favorite ballads, and you know what really made me love that song? It's one of the only songs I grew up with where I listened to it in the car with my parents, and my parents said, oh, this is a good song.
Yeah, it's like a mainstream tune.
It is. It's a really catchy mainstream tune. I love how there's not a lot of songs where the vocals start out exactly at the beginning of the song, and I love, I often heard about a place so far away. Like, I love how it starts with that, the piano and the vocals right away, and it's just such a cool ballad. The lyrics are pretty cool. Castle in the Sky, and
I love that song. It's like a hymn. You could sing that in church.
Totally. I could hear like a big, you know, chorus of people in a church singing that song. So I got to go with Heaven or Nothing.
All right. Howard?
That's the crazy thing is both of those songs are close or favorites of mine on those albums. And
it's a real showdown for you.
Yeah. Love at Full Volume is just one that... That stuck with me so hard.
It catches you right away.
Yeah, and it's like 2.5 minutes long, but just love it. It's such a fun song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still think I got to go with Heaven or Nothing. It's that catchy. Even to this day, it's still that catchy.
Yeah.
I honestly think it's one of the best songs that he wrote.
I think that might have been written by the Elefantes for some reason.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it seems like, to me, once again, if there was any justice in the world, that would have been a huge hit.
Oh, absolutely.
They never even released it as a single or anything. I have to go back to a classic Mike Lee, too. I recall The Night We Married, this is from Love at Full Volume, moved together, me
you know
and
what?
My lady.
I don't think, I'm going to interrupt you. I don't think, I think it was, I think it was one of the guys in the band.
Okay, we'll look it up.
I got to look this up.
You look it up as I read this this passage to you. I recall the night we married, moved together, me and my lady. I enjoy her. Lord, I love her. She is mine. I enjoy her. Okay. Of all the things I think about my wife, I enjoy her is not something that she... I don't think she would be too happy with it. You enjoy me? What the hell is that?
That is the unhottest way to explain yourself. I enjoy her.
Lord, I love her. Once again, like this is, if you were a Barron Cross fan, that was a tough, tough battle between those two tunes. As both Howard and I are trying to figure out who wrote Heaven or Nothing, it's hard to find. It doesn't say when you go to the album who wrote the tunes. So
you know where I saw a lot of this at the website Discogs, like
Discogs, yeah.
Which is fun. Elefantes. You're right.
Yeah, which is funny. I had to go.
CJ's got a good memory for that stuff.
Another thing too about these two albums, I had to go on Discogs because I had to find out the song order changes.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing because I always had the cassette of Atomic Arena and State of Control. Right. I never had the CD or vinyl, and the on State of Control, I think it's State of Control. Like the. There's different songs at the end and a different number of songs.
Well, there's two extra songs from this. There's Your Love Gives, which is a very pretty ballad. And then there's Escape in the Night, which is it's a B-side if you've ever heard one. It's a very mid-tempo.
Yeah.
You know. So for me, I had the LP, which ends with 2,000 Years.
Yeah.
And then the cassette that I bought later had Escape in the Night as track 11 after 2,000 Years. So Your Love Gives I never had on anything.
See, that's what I had on the cassette. So that's the one I know. 2,000 Years was not on
what?
Like the cassette.
That's crazy. Yeah,
from what I remember. I only heard that song like a few years ago for the first time.
My friend Jeremy, he had the disc, so I would get to hear 2,000 Years. I had the tape, so I got to hear Your Love Gives.
Wow. Well, we'll get to that because there's a song before that. There's King of Kings versus...
But the reason I mentioned that is because when I found out we were going to do this, I had to go on, and you guys had mentioned 2,000 Years. I'm like, whoa, I don't know about that. And I had to go on that website, Discogs, and click on CD, cassette, and vinyl.
Wow.
And I had to click on cassette because that's what I had back in the day, and it had the correct song order and the songwriters for A State of Control.
No kidding.
It. Yeah.
I wonder if it's different on the vinyl then. Like,
well, I think it is.
The vinyl ended with 2,000 Years.
Okay.
That's because that's the one that I got. Because once again, like that to me is a cornerstone of Barron Cross's whole.
And I'm bummed I didn't get to hear it back in the day.
And I never heard Your Love Gives until a few years ago. And even when you guys mentioned it, I had to play
I remember saying it. I was like, I've always loved Your Love Gives. And you're like, what? Where's that? And I remember sending the link to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had not heard it.
Yeah.
Which is weird. But once again, you didn't know those B-sides. But that never came out in Canada in any way, shape, or form.
Wow.
So, like I said, we get this. It's King of Kings versus Bigotry Man in brackets. Who Are You? With one of the most a riff that I would have written. And then you play that along on the drums with the bass. Gong 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 gong. I remember I would tell the drummer, "This is what you should play." You know, it's a Bigotry Man. What?
Yeah, not
Bigotry Man. So now he's gone to Jamaica.
It always reminded
me of not his finest hour.
It reminded me of Miracle Man by Ozzy.
Came out about the same time. And King of Kings, another Steve. That was the Steve Whittaker song on Atomic Arena.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit stock, and also again had the dun 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 dun, dun beat.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a hard one to pick from. I got to go with King of Kings, I guess, just because it's a little more polished, good, better chorus. And Bigotry Man is just, it's one of those weird, awkward Mike Lee lyrics that really makes no sense. So I'm going to go with King of Kings. Bigotry Man.
I got to go with King of Kings, too. I agree. Yeah, it's King of Kings is a great chorus. And Bigotry Man's just... the title just, it was out, I think it was around the same time as Miracle Man. And I was like... It just kind of always made me think of Miracle Man, and I liked Miracle Man better.
And back in those days, you would kind of judge a song just by the song title.
Yeah.
I would look at it first, because if you bought the LP, I would have to take the bus home, and I would have a whole 45-minute bus ride to read the lyrics if there was any. If there wasn't, just look at the song titles and like, oh, what do I think about this one?
Yep.
I remember when like, Summer and Time came out, I thought Loneliness of a Long-Distance Runner, that's going to be the best song ever. Like, who would write a song called that?
Yeah. Right?
So Bigotry Man, I was like, once again, like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I still remember being at work and listening to the album, like on lunch break, listening to State of Control, and trying to like Bigotry. And it was basically, you couldn't do it. It was a B-side. It just was.
The racist rambles on to tell what good he's done. His pride and arrogance has made him smaller, and so the bigot falls, hypocrisy's black walls cave in on his unworthy head.
I wonder if it was about like one of their buddies, and their buddy heard it, and it's like, hey, they wrote that about me.
I think it's one of those things where Mike was like, well, what kind of topics can we talk
about?
We're pretty much exhausted out of everything.
I'm pretty sure he was at the end of the album.
Yeah, one more lesson to teach. What wrongs are going on in the world?
Yeah. Bigots? Yeah, you can't call the song Bigot. How about Bigotry Man? Yeah.
It's basically like, this Sunday School rocks.
That's heavy, yeah.
He must have saw like, I bet he saw like David Duke on CNN or something. He's like, okay, that's what this song's about.
And then we get to the final, and this is going to be a tough one because it's two of my favorite Baron Cross songs, both of them long, both of them proggy, both of them very Maiden-esque, and both of them just got crazy Mike Lee vocals. And we're talking about Living Dead versus 2,000 Years. And as a Baron Cross fan, the Atomic Arena record obviously came up first, so Living Dead at the end of the record just blew me away because it was a long song, and I was like, holy shit, this is great.
Yeah.
After all these great songs, this one's even better. Starts right in your face, just as 2,000 Years does. Mm-hmm. It's a hard decision. What do you got to think about, Richard?
I have to go with Living Dead, and it's only because it's not a fault of 2,000 Years. You know,
you just didn't grow up with it.
It's a great song, but I didn't grow up with it because I had the cassette and it wasn't on there. And I'm a big, you know, zombie movie fan. So
right.
Even though Living Dead, I can't remember if it's even about that. Probably not. I loved the title, Living Dead. I was like, oh, that's heavy. So I got to go with Living Dead.
A heavy song title with a heavy riff overall. Just a great killer tune, right? Mm-hmm. You think, Howard?
Living Dead. Spin the wheel of chance. What did you win? But this is no game show you're starring in.
Life is but a burning blade of grass.
You're not on Wheel of Fortune.
You can literally deliver that like John Mulaney stand-up. And it would sound, it's like, wow, that's spot on. But for me, I think I heard 2,000 Years more. It's a toss-up because they're both great songs.
Yeah.
But since I heard... I heard 2,000 way more. I'm going to go with that one.
2,000, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to go with 2,000 Years just because this was the last song you heard of Baron Cross. They came back 5 years later, but this is basically the end of their run. And once again, it ends powerfully.
Yeah.
It's a perfect tune for them. It's angry, and it's talking about Jesus. There's no hidden messages.
Oh, no, not at all.
This is the great link. Now I will disclose his name. It's Jesus Christ. Why did he come just to die, and how did he rise? Why is our system of dating based on one man's death? And why is the world upside down just because of one man's life? But I love that. Why is the system of dating based on one man's death? And I'm like, what does that even mean? Because he died, I guess.
B.C. and A.D.
He was born on Christmas, so there's your system of dating, and there's Easter. And I'm like, I don't know what he was getting at, but I love this chorus. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. There's no other name for which I'm saved. I've got the power. It's in my sights. Because with him, I'm not afraid to die. So I got to go with 2,000 Years. Great tune.
Yep.
Great lyric. So that's the one I got to go with.
Yeah. And I always knew Your Love Gives. To me, that was the final song on State of Control.
That was my favorite song on the album.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
It's pretty much simple ballad, piano, Mike singing. It's a fantastic love song to a guy.
I know, and he doesn't reveal that till the very end when he mentions Jesus.
Yeah, so if there's a, you know, girls, if you're dating a guy named Jesus or Jesus, you know, Sing them that song because it's beautiful.
Make that your first dance at the wedding. It's a great ballad. It honestly is. It was only available, I guess, on the cassette or something.
Yeah, I think that was it.
I said, I'd never heard of its existence before. So when you guys even bringing it up, that 2,000 years wasn't on this record. So interesting that they chose that, whoever chose that, because I would not want to end a record with that song, especially when you had 2,000 years in the chamber. Because that, like I said, it ends with a big crash and burn and a crazy scream. And if you never heard another Baron Cross song, which we didn't until Rattle Your Cage came out 5 years later, you'd think, okay, that's a good stamp to this band.
But
that's
I wonder, I wonder if 2,000 years was just too long. Like if they maybe fit it on the cassette.
It's even longer than Stage of Intensity. Yeah. That's a good point too.
Yeah, maybe it was a 60-minute cassette or something. That's all they could fit.
For me, I kind of thought of Your Love Gives as just swan song because it was just like they just kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. So that's how I felt about it. And it was, and I also liked it because it was so different. It's they didn't have, they really were like kind of experimental in what they did.
That's my point, that they had no rules. And I really appreciated that because it wasn't like Stryper was Stryper. They played either very ballady ballads or very heavy rock. Baron Cross was a lot of stuff, crazy prog and pop tunes like Hard Lies and ballads.
Almost hardcore with Cultic Regimes.
You know, and, very underrated band as we wind down here. It's funny because I was supposed to go to New York Comic Con. I just told my ride to, I'll just meet you there. And she's like, well, where are you going to meet me? I'm like, I don't know. I'm doing a Baron Cross interview. Leave me alone.
Look for me next to Chewbacca.
But I think that a very underrated band that was probably... it was a detriment that they were Christian. Probably they were probably persecuted for that, maybe not given the chance. But the only reason why I love Stryper so much more is they were the originators and they've been playing so much longer. But if Baron Cross had 10 albums that were as good as these three, they might be my favorite Christian metal band of all time.
Well, and I think if Baron Cross was a little more subtle with the lyrics, I think they could have gone mainstream.
Right.
Stryper had a great way of, you know, kind of getting their message out, but not a lot of the songs that became popular were songs that had a very subtle message, you know, like calling on you.
Sure.
You don't know
it
that's
in your face.
And that's immediately the song that I go to. It's just like, you know what he's talking about, but it's just, it's like kind of vague and it's just an awesome song.
So,
and if they'd have shifted that way a little more and he wasn't so heavy handed with like, teaching you a lesson,
but they weren't having it. They didn't care. They wanted to be in your face,
which
that
makes
way.
Them cool.
That's the thing. Yeah. I wore it out. Loved it.
Yeah. You know, if they had gotten a few breaks with bigger bands, if they went on tour with an Iron Maiden or a Priest, or you know, because if you're talking, you know, you look into like a U2 record, those political lyrics are very much in your face. For example,
oh, absolutely.
A lot of big bands, they're in your face was messages and Jesus is king. You know, and if you don't join, you're gonna die. You know, don't wait like a thief in the night. And even Crying Over You, I think, was talking a little bit about some religious lyrics in there from what I recall.
Yeah, and then he threw like Girl in there.
Right.
But it was.
Yeah.
It was just the relationship.
You could tell he was talking about a God.
Yeah.
So break it down. What's the favorite of the two?
For me, I love so much about both albums, but State of Control.
Wow. Okay. Richard?
Definitely got to be State of Control for me as well. And solely because of the song Out of Time. I just think that's such a strong song, such a catchy song that I still listen to when I go running. And it's like, you know, as much as I love Heaven or Nothing, I don't really listen to that as much when I run. And I have to go with State of Control. Yeah.
I'll go with Atomic Arena just as a barstool conversation because I think every song on Atomic Arena is good. I think State of Control is a little bit patchier, but the better songs are on State of Control for me. 2,000 Years, Stage of Intensity, Face in the Dark. But as a whole, I think 1 to 10, that Atomic Arena is a stronger collection of songs overall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome because you're wrong.
I mean, I said, I agree with you, but I'm like, no, State of Control.
Once again,
between Out of Time and Your Love Gives, I was won over.
Well, once again, this is the beauty. The Classic Album Clash, both albums are a 10. Just what are you feeling on the day? So
yeah,
the guys, awesome to hang out with you. Yeah. Overall, though, what's your favorite Barron Cross song?
Out of Time, absolutely.
Howard,
Your Love Gives.
Love Gives.
Yeah,
man. What am I gonna say? I'll go Stage of Intensity.
Wow,
there you go.
See, that's a good blend.
That's a good blend. If you guys are listening, never heard Barron Cross, go check out those three songs. You
good get a starting little bit
of
point.
A starting point of what this band was all about. So, guys, always a pleasure to hang out and see you guys face to face.
Hell yeah,
we always end up making it work. So next time, what do we do next? The Guardian Classic Album Clash.
You know that
Mass.
I was
Voices in the Night versus whatever other album they have.
Mass is way more obscure.
Yeah.
But actually, me and Jeremy were talking about that. I was like, I could kind of see Guardian being in there. I just don't know. How familiar are you with
Guardian? I love Guardian. I'm very familiar with
Okay.
I could do that.
All right. Well,
it'd be First Watch versus,
Fire and Love.
Fire and Love.
Gotta be.
I think they probably both have 10 songs on it. So,
yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So all of you that are listening, the dozen that are listening to this, beware. The next one will be the Guardian Classic. I'm pretty sure we're just amusing ourselves at this point.
Absolutely.
We're not even going to release them. We'll just record it and just we'll it amongst each other.
Us three will listen, yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. And I think I'm going to get left behind by my crew. So whatever. I'll just go get arrested, like barf the
baseballs.
Yeah. Amazing.
Thanks, guys.